Today in Ukraine, influence and conflict with Russia continues to dominate that Eastern European country. But Russia's power over its smaller neighbor to the west has a long history. Beginning in 1932, at least 5 million Ukrainians died because of famine. There was drought at the time and the chaos of forced collectivization from Joseph Stalin's Soviet Union. The Soviets took steps to cover up the details of the famine, but newly opened archives and personal accounts have revealed to the West what many families in Ukraine had been forbidden to talk about for generations, that the famine was no accident. It was deliberate policy set in motion by Stalin and his supporters to weaken Ukraine and break its national will. Ann Applebaum is a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian, a columnist for The Washington Post, and author of the new book, Red Famine, Stalin's War on Ukraine.
People did speak about it privately, it has to be said, and the stories were passed down, you know, through families and so on. Many Ukrainians were able to leave the country during the Second World War, and many of them moved to Western Europe and North America, where they would hold famine commemorations, and they tried to put together collections of essays and memoirs about it. But really, it seemed incredible to people that something like that could have really happened.
So much of your book centers on 1932. The warnings are pouring in from party officials all over the country to Stalin. Ukraine is starving, they tell him. But this wasn't accidental. In fact, this was strategy.
You're absolutely right. It was not an accident. In the autumn of 1932, the Soviet Politburo took a series of decisions designed to make the famine worse in Ukraine. They included drawing a cordon around Ukraine so that people couldn't leave. They included blacklisting particular towns and villages. And above all, the one policy that was carried out in Ukraine and in very few other places was a decision to send activist teams into villages. So groups of people went house to house and literally confiscated people's food. They took it away and left them with nothing.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit more, because on the one hand, forced collectivization was the rule of the day, the ideology of the Soviet communists. But this other thing that you're talking about is using famine to really stamp out Ukrainian identity.
The Ukrainian national movement had been a problem for the Soviet Union from the very beginning. In 1917, when the Bolshevik Revolution broke out, there was also a revolution in Ukraine, and it was led by the Ukrainian national intelligentsia, and their goal was to create a Ukrainian state. And they were actually at war with the Bolsheviks. And Stalin remembered that period, particularly because collectivization led to a further rebellion in Ukraine. And he saw that this problem of Ukraine wanting to reassert itself, to have a different identity, not to be part of the Soviet Union in quite the same way as other republics, was going to go on being a problem for him. And he decided to eliminate it. And he did so by weakening the peasants, and I should say also by launching an attack on the Ukrainian intelligentsia, the politicians, museum curators, architects, artists, writers, in a mass arrest that took place at the same time as the famine and immediately afterwards. So these were really two-pronged assault on the Ukrainian state and on the Ukrainian nation, designed to make sure that it never posed an ideological threat to Moscow ever again.
So how did Ukraine eventually get out from under this famine? Why didn't it go on for 20 years?
Well, the famine ended because the Soviet state decided to end it. The goal was never to destroy or kill all Ukrainians. As I said, the goal was to weaken the national movement and to weaken the peasants' desire for resistance.
You say Stalin in 1932 twisted the knife in Ukraine. The Soviet leadership launched a famine within a famine, a disaster specifically targeted at Ukraine and Ukrainians. The result, the Ukrainian national movement disappeared completely from Soviet politics and from public life. This was effective.
It was effective. It eliminated Ukraine for the lifetime of the Soviet Union, though it's important to remember that in the 1980s, when the Soviet Union began to fall apart and when Gorbachev started carrying out reforms, one of the first things that happened was that Ukrainians remembered the national movement and they remembered this piece of history and they started talking about the famine in public again. It was the memory of the past. It was also the memory of the Soviet assault on the Ukrainian intelligentsia that people had kept alive in various ways, and that came back and became a big topic of national debate. And that was one of the things that led to the Ukrainian independence movement of 1990-1991, which eventually declared independence and was actually, as Stalin had feared, the factor that brought a real end to the Soviet Union. It was the Ukrainian refusal to join Russia and the other republics that persuaded Russia to abandon the idea of keeping the USSR together.
What does the Red Famine and the history there and the Russian assault on Ukrainian peasants and Ukrainian society tell us about the Russian government today, about Vladimir Putin today and Russian clients in Ukraine today?
So the current Russian government still tends to see Ukraine the way that Moscow has seen Ukraine for many decades, and that is as a kind of colony. It's not a real country. It doesn't deserve to have its own status. It can't make its own policy. It can't decide to sign a free trade agreement with Europe, for example. And in a real way, I think Putin, like Stalin before him, sees Ukraine as a problem and an ideological challenge that he needs to suppress. Stalin saw Ukraine as a source of anarchy and maybe as a challenge to Soviet unity, and Putin sees Ukraine as problematic because of Ukraine's attachment to the West, because there's an important pro-democracy movement in Ukraine. And that thing that he saw happening in Ukraine in Kiev in 2014, namely lots of young people waving EU flags, shouting anti-corruption slogans and calling for democracy, that's exactly what he's afraid of in Moscow, and why he still continues to try to undermine Ukraine in all kinds of ways, you know, propaganda ways and economic ways even today.
What might the lesson be for people in the West and for Vladimir Putin himself and the Russian government from this history that you write about on how this new round of influence in Ukraine might turn out?
I don't ever like to draw an exact parallel between the past and the present, but I think it's a mistake to underestimate the Ukrainianness of Ukraine. You know, it's a real country. It has its own identity. It has a real language. And it also has a very powerful kind of pro-European, pro-democratic tradition that it will fight to uphold, as it has already shown. And it is wrong to underestimate it as some kind of colony or province of Russia. And then on the other hand, remember that the disinformation, the attempts to manipulate the story of Ukraine that we're seeing coming out of Russia, the lies that are told about what's happened in Ukraine. You know, there's a long precedent for that. And again, I don't want to draw an exact parallel, but, you know, when dictators try to change reality or alter reality, they often do it with violence in mind.
Anne Applebaum, columnist for The Washington Post, author of the new book, Red Famine, Stalin's War on Ukraine. Anne, it's always good to have you on.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.